This is Conning Around, a Stargate Atlantis, Stargate SG-1 crossover fic, written by Springwolf, read by Raina Jenkins. The story is rated PG and contains no real spoilers for either show. For the rest of his life, John would remember Rodney McKay in that damn Klingon outfit. He wasn't dressed as one of the new style Klingons either, with their kooky, bumpy foreheads, but like the old-style Klingons from the original Star Trek series, with excessive amounts of makeup, shaggy eyebrows, long mustachios, and that uniform with the horizontal stripes that made Rodney look like an overgrown, constipated bumblebee. Said Klingon bee was currently scowling down at him. The eyebrows and mustache lent it a frightening amount of weight. "Hold still, Colonel!" John squirmed in his seat again, the order almost forcing him to disobey. "But, Rodney," he whined, "the ear things pinch. Can I go as somebody else?" "What, did you want to go as Ensign Crusher?" That mustache made Rodney's sneer truly impressive as well. John resolved not to breathe a word about it, lest Rodney make an effort to grow a real mustache of his own. "Rodney, perhaps he does not need ear prosthesis. His ears are pointed enough without them." Radek crossed his arms and tilted his head thoughtfully, eyeing John's ears. John covered the ears in question. "Hey!" he protested. "Dr. Zelenka is right, Dr. McKay," said Miko, bouncing excitedly on her toes. "Colonel Shepard looks good enough. Please, let us go now. The costume contest will be starting soon." Miko was dressed as a Bajoran from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, complete with sexy, funky ear jewelry. John kept wanting to reach out and touch the little chains. "It's Radek, John, and Rodney, Miko," Radek reminded her with a smile. "We are not on Atlantis now, not working. In fact, we are playing. If we are playing like children, we should at least get to call each other by names as children do." With his hair slicked back and dyed black, yellowish-green contacts and vast amount of makeup, Radek made a credible Data from Star Trek The Next Generation. Miko gifted him with a brilliant smile. "Yes, Radek." "Right. Okay, just a minute. Let me just check his makeup." Rodney's strong fingers pinched John's chin in an almost bruising grip as he swiveled John's head back and forth. He released the chin only to grip the back of John's neck to hold his head still as he dabbed on yet more hair gel and applied the brush brutally to get John's hair to lie absolutely flat and in the required direction. Rodney stepped back and narrowed his eyes. "Okay, do the hand sign." John sighed and obediently raised his hand to make a V shape with his fingers. "Live long and prosper." "Not so whiny," Rodney snapped. "Get your voice deeper." John blinked as a flash went off in his face. Miko was wielding the camera again. "Please, John, do the eyebrow," she bounced hopefully. John exchanged grins with Radek. She'd called him John, possibly for the very first time ever. Now, if he could ever get Rodney to do the same thing, this whole trip would have been worth it. He smoothed his face to impassivity and carefully arched one eyebrow. "Fascinating," John intoned, trying to deepen his voice. Miko squealed and clapped and snapped another picture. John grinned, anticipating when those photos would end up on the pictures folder on the Atlantis intranet. His dignity would be completely shot, but he'd known that the moment he agreed to come on this wacky trip. Morale would skyrocket, though, especially among the scientists and the geekier military personnel. As for the rest of the military personnel, hey, making fun of the commanding officer was a time-honored tradition. He rose and clapped Roddick on the shoulder. "Let's go win the costume contest, then." "Oh, please," Rodney complained as they filed out of the suite. "All we'll be doing is blending in. We're nowhere near good enough to win the costume contest. Did you remember your tricorder, Roddick?" They met Taylor in the lobby, waiting by the elevators. John had to admit that she looked very sexy in her little Vulcan ears and upswept eyebrows, not to mention the costume. He had originally wanted her to go as Xena, and she would have gone along with it, too. What did Taylor know about Earth sci-fi television characters, anyway? But Rodney just had to be a little dictator and demand that their group all stick to the Star Trek theme. The only thing that had kept John from pouting was Rodney divulging his plan to get Taylor to go as Seven of Nine from Star Trek Voyager. But then he and Rodney had both been forced to sulk when Miko had nixed the Seven of Nine idea, swept in, and declared that Taylor would go as T'Pol from Star Trek Enterprise. Rodney had looked ready to combat that decision, but Radek had unexpectedly backed Miko up, and Rodney was still smarting from the smackdown he'd gotten earlier when he tried to bully the Czech into dressing up as Chekhov. One glower from Radek had been enough to get Rodney to leave Miko and Taylor alone. The camera flashed again as Miko took another photo of Taylor in her costume. John was glad that Rodney had assigned the digital camera and its huge memory card to Miko. They'd have lots of nice photos to bring back to Atlantis. If he or Taylor had been in charge of the camera, he knew, they'd remember to take maybe 5 or 6 photos between them. Rodney would just obsessively take about 50 pictures of some extremely important, from a nerd perspective, thing from every conceivable angle, and maybe a couple of tasteless pictures of women in skimpy costumes that would get them in trouble with Elizabeth. And Radek? It didn't bear thinking about. Radek with a camera in his hands? Nobody who knew him let him near the things. The man just didn't have a photographer's eye at all. He could have taken a snapshot of Chaya, and the woman's nose hairs would be all you would have ended up noticing. John and Taylor exchanged Vulcan greeting hand signals, as Rodney had drilled them. Flash! Went Miko's camera. Live long and prosper, John, Taylor intoned regally. John practiced raising the one eyebrow again. Radek snickered. John fought the goofy grin they wanted to take up residence on his face, and lost spectacularly as Taylor switch hit and went with the other eyebrow. Damn, but Taylor did the eyebrow thing better than he did. Your Earth customs are most fascinating, Rodney, she said, totally deadpan, as she took Rodney's arm. Curses, thought John. Foiled again! Taylor had won another round of who's the real alien around here anyway? John tried manfully to suppress a most un-Vulcan case of the giggles as Rodney and Taylor led the way into the hotel's main ballroom for the costume contest, Rodney regaling Taylor with stories of other science fiction conventions he'd attended in the past. Miko and Radek, linked arm in arm with John, weren't helping by making no effort at all to suppress their own merriment. Oh, this had been a great idea. John had initially been skeptical and resistant when Rodney had first proposed the idea at the SGC. They had just finished their various debriefings and were due about 10 days' leave before the scientists were all supposed to engage in the heavy-duty recruiting tour that had brought them back to Earth. John was supposed to review a bunch of military candidates for the next few rotations and inspect some proposed weapon systems to be brought back to Atlantis on the next Daedalus run. Taylor was supposed to go in for another round of interviews with SGC anthropologists and sociologists and a somewhat too attentive Dr. Jackson, before she and John were scheduled for a trip to Washington, D.C. to beat the fundraising drums at the Pentagon, and in front of whatever political committees that Dr. Weir had signed them up for. It wasn't exactly something John was looking forward to. This was why he'd been doubtful when Rodney suggested they all go on a ski trip together to Canada. Rodney had planned to visit his sister for a few days, hit the Toronto Science Fiction Convention in Toronto for a couple more days, and then spend the balance of the time skiing at a nice little resort in the brochures he showed them all. John hadn't been sure that he wanted to spend all his leave in Canada, and he definitely wasn't sure he wanted to spend it with his co-workers, whom he usually had to spend all his time with in Atlantis anyway. Miko had been an easy shoo-in, flustered, embarrassed, but delighted at the invitation. What John hadn't predicted was Radek and Taylor's enthusiastic endorsement of the idea as well, leaving him as the lone stick in the mud. And then there had been that look on Rodney's face. Which was why John was currently wandering around the dealer room of a science fiction convention in Canada, in full Vulcan mufti, thankfully minus ear-pinching prosthesis. Rodney had been right. Although their group's costumes were quite good, they clearly hadn't been in the running for any of the prizes in the costume contest. Not compared to some of the really spectacular costumes at the convention. He wondered where those people got the time, or the money, to come up with some of the costumes he'd seen. when the costume contest was over, and he hoped Miko had gotten some good snapshots of that really cool dragon. They had all decided to visit the dealer room and split up to go their separate ways, scheduled to rendezvous in 2 hours in the seminar area. Radek and Miko had got some panels they wanted to attend, and John had decided to tag along with Rodney to see the Doctor Who blooper vids. They figured out what to do with Taylor when they got there. She was certainly being a good sport about the whole weird Earth sci-fi convention thing. She strolled along by John's side, face grave and demure. A nice pair of Vulcans they made, the two of them. "Let me know if you see anything you'd like," John told her, waving his hand at the displays. "I'd be happy to buy you some souvenirs." Taylor nodded and graced him with a small smile. "I believe if we found earrings like Miko's, I might like to obtain several for my friends back on Atlantis, and it would be nice if we could find something to bring back for Ronan."
"Oh, yeah, good idea,"
John agreed fervently. A bad case of Athosian yellow spot fever had kept a very sullen and unhappy Ronan back at the infirmary in Atlantis instead of coming on this trip to Earth. A little apology and get-well-soon gift would not go amiss. Someone in the crowd plucked at his sleeve. "Shepard," the man hissed. John turned his head and frowned. "What? Hey, Colonel Mitchell, is that you?"
"Shh, keep it down," said the man in overbright camis with a Colonel Danning name tag patch over the pocket. "I need you to discreetly come this way with me."
John raised an eyebrow at Mitchell.
"Discreet? Are you kidding? Around here?"
"Colonel Shepard, I am afraid it is a matter of some urgency." The tall fellow looming up behind him, garbed as Grell the Robot, but with a convention badge that proclaimed him to be called Murray, sounded just like Teal'c. John craned his neck back to check out the forehead under the heavy makeup. Okay, it was Teal'c, and since he very much doubted SG-1 would have sudden yearning to visit the very same sci-fi convention his own people were at, there was definitely trouble afoot. John met Taylor's eye and gestured with a subtle jerk of his head. "We're coming, guys." Mitchell and Teal'c led them behind the last row of booths, past a blue curtain into an area filled with packing boxes, a large roll of plastic tarp, and a small forklift. Now that John had his mental filter set at SG-1, he easily recognized the woman with the dark-haired wig and the Major Monroe patch as Lieutenant Colonel Carter, and the man with the chunky black square-framed glasses was easy to recognize as Dr. Jackson, despite the name patch that proclaimed him as Dr. Levant.
"What's going on?" John asked worriedly.
"We're sorry to interrupt your leave with your friends, Colonel Shepard," apologized Carter. "General Landry got a tip that the Trust was going to attempt to capture one of your people," interrupted Jackson abruptly.
"Wasn't that the group responsible for the incident with Colonel Caldwell?" Taylor asked, concerned.
"Absolutely, yes," confirmed Carter.
"And they want to try to infiltrate Atlantis again?" asked John, horrified.
"Bingo!" Mitchell pointed at him and nodded.
"We are here to prevent this from occurring," Teal'c assured him.
"I assume they wish to implant one of us with the same kind of parasite that infested Colonel Caldwell," Taylor said. "Do you have any idea which of us might be the intended target?"
"We have no idea," Jackson sighed.
"Could just be a target of opportunity," said John.
"Which is why it's important to get a hold of all your people and get them back to the SGC, pronto," said Mitchell.
John winced.
"Ah, Rodney's going to give us all hell over this."
"I agree, John," said Taylor, frowning. "Must we end our holiday early?" she asked Carter.
"Sorry," Carter shrugged. "I don't see any other way to make sure you're safe."
"I believe our greater duty is to safeguard Atlantis," Taylor said gravely.
"What are you talking about?" Mitchell asked.
"Simply that this is a perfect opportunity to capture those operatives from this trust organization which seeks to infiltrate Atlantis," said Taylor.
John arched an eyebrow at her. "You mean, since we already know they're going to try something anyway?"
"Precisely," said Taylor. "We'd remain alert and offer ourselves as, what would you call it?
Bait, or stalking goats, if I'm following your train of thought correctly." interjected Jackson. "And then you guys swoop in and snatch him up when they go to make their move," Shepard said, illustrating with swooping and snatching motions of his hands.
"It is a bold plan," Teal'c purred in approval.
"I don't know," said Mitchell, rubbing the back of his neck. "We're just supposed to get you safely back to the SGC. If something goes wrong, if one of us gets snaked, we'll just get Hammond to use the Asgard beam to vacuum it out of us, like he did for Caldwell. We'll be good as new, and they'll lose the element of surprise anyway. You might even leave the snake in there for a while and keep an eye on the victim to see if you can figure out what they have planned," John urged.
"Don't say that," Carter said sharply, shuddering. "It's not that easy. You haven't had a symbiote take over your body. It happened to me, and even though my symbiote was a Tok'ra, it was still a very unpleasant experience."
"Caldwell survived it," John said stubbornly. "I think Tale is right. It's our duty to protect Atlantis. If the Trust fails this time because you got us out of the way, they'll just try again, and maybe the next time you won't hear about it. At least this time, you'll know to watch out, and we have a good chance of capturing some of them."
Mitchell and Carter were frowning.
"What do you say we find the rest of your group and find out if they're agreeable to your plan or if they want us to extract them?" suggested Jackson sensibly.
"Okay," John agreed, turning to go back out into the dealer room.
"Wait, wait up! You are staying here where Jackson and Carter can keep an eye on you," Mitchell instructed. "Teal'c and I will go look for the rest of your scientists."
John scowled and got ready to argue. Taylor forestalled him, folding her arms and commenting, "I believe it will be difficult for you to convince Dr. McKay to do anything without an explanation first. If John and I go with you, you have some hope of retrieving him discreetly."
"No, and no,"
Mitchell insisted, ready to outstubborn them. Carter put a stop to the impending argument.
"I think McKay will come quietly if I ask him. Kim, why don't you wait here with these guys while Teal'c and I go out there and try to locate the others?"
"Fine," Mitchell agreed sullenly.
John had been right. Rodney was pissed.
"Oh, this can't be good," Rodney complained, as soon as he saw the rest of the group gathered around the forklift. He turned to Carter and aimed a pseudo-Klingon scowl at her.
"You got me here under false pretenses," he accused.
Carter blinked.
"I told you we need to talk in private, Rodney."
"We do. There's a situation that we..."
"I thought you meant you wanted to go make out somewhere," Rodney grumbled, half under his breath, sulking and crossing his arms in front of him.
Carter began to sputter.
"Hey, Rodney, look!"
John went fully into distraction mode.
"They brought us real gold Zack guns," he held one up.
"That's actually called a Zack Nicktail, Colonel," Rodney said, in a superior tone, as he took one from John's hand to inspect it more closely, instantly distracted by alien technology, as John had known he would be. Carter was still opening and closing her mouth and getting a handle on her temper, as Mitchell and Jackson briefed everyone now that Rodney was here. John and Taylor outlined their idea to the others. Roddick frowned with that worried crinkle on his forehead that John hadn't seen since they'd left Atlantis.
"I don't know, Colonel," Roddick said slowly. "It sounds very dangerous, that..."
He waved one arm toward the noisy dealer's room floor to indicate the convention. "It's a very uncontrolled situation. Anything could happen." He made an apologetic face at Mitchell. "No matter how well you attempt to protect us."
"But you'll be ready for them, Roddick," John tried to reassure him, heart sinking because Roddick was calling him Colonel again, and he just knew he was going to lose this argument.
Miko was pale and looked equally scared and mutinous, scowling as savagely as Rodney at his worst.
"I hate this," she said quietly but forcefully, clenching her fists. "I am afraid. I don't want a gold in me, but I hate that they ruined our holiday, too. I don't want them to get away with this."
"Radic is right, John," said Rodney, looking up from his inspection of the Zat. John didn't know whether to be happy that Rodney had called him John at last, or pissed that he had agreed with the other scientist.
"It's much too dangerous for them," Rodney went on, oblivious to John's reaction. "They're not trained to work on off-world teams the way the rest of us have been. But Miko's also right. The Trust shouldn't get away with ruining our vacation. And Taylor's right, too. Rodney met Taylor's eyes and nodded firmly. We have a duty to protect Atlantis. We need to do this, but we also need to keep Radek and Miko safe. John suppressed a sudden urge to crush Rodney McKay into the biggest hug of his life, because that would have embarrassed them both. But he made no attempt at all to stifle the broad grin that he aimed in Rodney's direction. On Rodney's other side, Taylor also beamed at him. Radek acknowledged his teammate's approval with a small smile and an arrogant lift of his chin before he addressed Mitchell. I assume, Colonel Mitchell, that you've called for military backup of some kind?
Well, since this isn't the United States, I can't very well call in a squadron of Marines, said Mitchell, sounding very long-suffering. But, yeah, with the Canadian government's permission, I was able to get hold of some backup for us. They're all dressed as characters from that Wormhole Extreme show. He indicated his own outfit. We're trying to be as discreet as possible and not make too many waves.
Excellent. My suggestion is that you have Dr. Zelenka and Kusanagi extracted to a secured venue until this little problem is dealt with. Meanwhile, your team and mine can play catch the gold.
Rodney would have pulled off that little speech with maximum suavity if he hadn't turned to John in the next minute and muttered out of the corner of his mouth, That's a good plan, right? Don't you think that's a good plan?
John clapped Rodney warmly on the shoulder.
That's a great plan, Rodney, especially since they're going to let us keep these little suckers.
He hefted the Zat gun and waggled it.
They look like sci-fi guns anyway, so they'll fit right in. Nobody will know.
Now remember, only fire that thing once, okay? Jackson admonished worriedly. We don't want to accidentally hurt any bystanders.
One shot stuns, but two shots kill, McKay, Carter said pointedly.
I knew that, Rodney protested.
I did, he muttered at John's indulgent look.
Mitchell, meanwhile, had been calling his backup, men in the two bright Wormhole Extreme camis, who showed up shortly to take Zelenka and Kusanagi away.
Be careful, Rodney, Radek admonished, as he grasped Rodney's shoulder. We need you back at Atlantis. You are too valuable to lose in this venture.
Don't worry, Radek. I'll look after him, John promised.
Radek nodded at John, the worry lines still gracing his forehead.
Yes, well, look after yourself as well, John, Taylor.
He touched Taylor's forearm briefly before he let himself be escorted away.
Miko just hugged them all quickly with the whispered, Be safe, and You're so brave, aimed at Rodney, that had McKay preening and bouncing on his toes as she was escorted away.
Okay, listen up. Mitchell drew them in with a glance when the two teams were alone. This is the way we're going to do this thing.
The plan had sounded good, but, like all plans, it fell apart a bit in the implementation. John ducked under the punch thrown by a very big, very pissed off, Conan the Barbarian look-alike, and scrambled under the table that fronted the booth. John hoped that Taylor had taken the opportunity to get away while he distracted Conan, whose convention badge, clipped to his leather loincloth, proclaimed him Jeff. Jeff the Barbarian just didn't have the same ring to it, though. It wasn't Taylor's fault that she'd mistaken Jeff/Conan for a Goa'uld. His eyes were kind of a really pale hazel brown. They should have realized that Taylor had never really gotten a good look at the Goa'uld that had been in Caldwell. It's not like they had a picture to show her a real Goa'uld's eyes flashed a really glowy, unmistakable yellow-gold color.
Civilian, 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 John muttered, to remind himself not to accidentally hurt anyone, even old Jeff there, while he crawled as rapidly as possible under the table, worming his way past storage boxes and various paraphernalia from the booth, which, oops, seemed to feature souvenir swords and knives. John hoped fervently that they were plastic, except, shit, they were in his tricorder. Radek was going to kill him. It seemed like at least some of them weren't plastic.
Hey, you want to put that down? He called urgently to Jeff the Barbarian, trying to keep the display table between them.
Was the guy on drugs or something?
Around them, a number of convention-goers were running screaming for security, while the rest gathered around to watch, seeming to think it was an impromptu Renfest-style show.
First you sick your crazy girlfriend on me, and then you insult me, and now you're complaining that I'm mad about it? Jeff Conan was really spitting fire then,
Hey, listen, I'm sorry. We thought you were somebody else, John yelled as he ducked another wild swing. Your snake tattoo is really very nice. At least Jeff had put down the knife, as requested. Where was Rodney? Where the heck was SG-1? Speaking of which, oh, thank God.
Is there a problem?
Teal'c queried in mock concern as he levered Jeff up onto his toes by the straps holding on his pseudo-armor breastplate. Jeff looked up into the Jaffa's look of doom, perfected over many decades as a first prime of Apophis, and gulped. John made his escape hastily, ducking under the curtain at the back of the booth. Well, he'd found Tayla and Rodney again. John's heart sank. Another really big guy, this one dressed in Star Trek gear like them. Like a Vulcan, only the costume was weird. A Romulan, maybe? The big Romulan was dragging Tayla by the arm down the aisle toward the rear of the hall, back where the forklift and the tarps were, out of sight of the convention-goers. Tayla was fighting like mad to get loose, and the guy was literally dragging her as she sank back onto her heels to lower her center of gravity. Rodney tried to block the Romulan's way, only to get a backhand that sent him crashing into a nearby booth.
Sorry,
the Romulan grinned toothily, obviously not sorry at all, as his eyes flashed Goa'uld gold. His voice was rusty with the Goa'uld overlay as he explained.
The Pon Far is kicking in. Me and the missus here have some business to take care of up in our room.
Let go of her! John let the momentum of his run crash him into the Goa'uld Romulan, knocking him away from Tayla. The Romulan roared and picked John up with a grip like steel on both his upper arms. John kicked and flailed as he dangled in the other man's hold, feeling like a little kid, equal parts embarrassed and scared out of his mind. Where the hell was SG-1? The Romulan roared again, in pain this time, and abruptly dropped John as Tayla, who had found sticks somewhere, beat him about the head and arms, dancing in and out too swiftly for him to grab her. John rolled out of the way and scrambled back to give Tayla room to fight. Out of the way! He urged the convention-goers. Again, about half had gone running for security, and the other half were crowded around watching like it was a big show. The Romulan guy was grabbing for Tayla again, howling as she used the sticks, which, from their decorations, were not being used for their originally intended purpose, to knock his reaching arms away. John winced from the memory of how much those sticks could hurt as Tayla delivered another blow. Go Tayla! John looked for an opening to fire his zat, where he wouldn't accidentally shoot any bystanders. Stop right there, you Romulan dog! Shouted Rodney from his perch, standing on top of one of the dealer's tables. How dare you disrupt the Klingon Federation peace talks! And with perfect panache, Rodney shot the gold Romulan with his zat, right in front of everybody. The pseudo-Romulan dropped, twitching, while the convention attendees clapped and cheered. That was so cool! Can I take your picture? Asked a cute Asian-looking girl with an American accent. She was wearing an outfit from some obscure fandom that John didn't recognize, but approved of anyway, since it resulted in sexy black leather pants, black boots, and a cropped black top that showed off her navel. A black backpack drooped against one of her boots. Of course, Rodney said grandly, before John could protest. Rodney placed a booted foot on the belly of the unconscious trust operative and folded his arms over his chest in a way that concealed the zat under the Klingon sash, proving that he did, after all, have a bare modicum of sense regarding security. All of you together, please, the girl urged, getting her camera ready. Her badge proclaimed her to be Sin, and John vaguely recognized her as one of the panelists on that fan art in media fandoms section of the program that he'd planned on attending, before this whole fiasco came about, of course. John sighed and resignedly shuffled over to Rodney on one side as Tayla flanked him on the other, both of them hiding their weapons behind their backs. John blinked as the camera flash went off, and the first thing he focused on when his vision cleared was Mitchell's scowling face just past the photographer. Behind him, Teal'c loomed, arms folded over his chest and frowning in disapproval. Beside them, Carter also looked grim. Jackson was the only one looking cheerful, but in that "they're gonna get it" way that boded ill for John and his team. Oh, shit, John thought. There goes the damn vacation.
The next day, the picture of them all in their pseudo-Star Trek glory came out in the weekend section of the Toronto Morning Star. In the following weeks, it made its way across the internet on various sci-fi fan websites. General Landry was not amused. All in all, John was glad to be allowed to escape back to Atlantis when the time came. Despite everything, sometimes the Pegasus Galaxy felt like a saner place. Admittedly, the Wraith looked like they belonged to the sci-fi convention, but at least he didn't have to dress up like a Vulcan. The end.
Reader's note. Earlier today, I went to my little sister's history class's production of The Constitutional Convention and Why It Was Awesome. And the kid playing Ben Franklin said, "I don't think any other convention could write a better constitution." And in all my fanish glory, I was like, "Oh, hey, conning around!" So that's why you have this podfic. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.